堂听 class.com。
Unit 67, Part 1. James wrote a play for television about an immigrant family who came to England from Pakistan and the problems they had settling down in England. The play was surprisingly successful, and it was bought by an American TV company. James was invited to go to New York to help with the production. He lived in Dulwich, which is an hour's journey away from Heathrow Airport. The flight was due to leave at 8:30 a.m., so he had to be at the airport about 7:30 in the morning. He ordered a minicab for 6:30, set his alarm for 5:45, and went to sleep. Unfortunately, he forgot to wind the clock, and it stopped shortly after midnight. Also, the driver of the minicab had to work very late that night and overslept. James woke with an awful feeling that something was wrong. He looked at his alarm clock. It stood there silently, with the hands pointing to 12:10. He turned on the radio and discovered that it was, in fact, 9:10. He swore quietly and switched on the electric kettle. He was just pouring the boiling water into the teapot when the 9:00 pips sounded on the radio. The announcer began to read the news. Reports are coming in of a crash near Heathrow Airport. A Boeing 707 bound for New York crashed shortly after taking off this morning. Flight number 2234. James turned pale. "My flight," he said out loud. "If I hadn't overslept, I'd have been on that plane."
Question 1. What was James' play about? Question 2. How far away was James's house from the airport? Question 3. Why did the minicab driver oversleep? Question 4. When did the Boeing 707 crash?
Part 2. 1. James was going to New York because he was going to act in the play. 2. The plane was due to leave at 7:30. 3. James discovered what time it was from the radio. 4. If James had not overslept, he might have died in the plane crash.
Unit 68, Part 1. Mr. and Mrs. Brown were going abroad for their holiday. They had a dog called Blackie, which they were very fond of, but they could not take him abroad with them, so they looked for a good place to leave him while they were away, and at last found a place which looked after dogs very well while their owners were away. They took Blackie there just before they left for their holiday and sadly said goodbye to him. At the end of their holiday, they got back to England very late at night, and as they thought that the place where Blackie was staying might be closed at the late hour, they decided to wait until the next morning before going to get him. So the next morning, Mr. Brown got into his car and drove off happily to collect Blackie. When he reached home with the dog, he said to his wife, "Do you know, dear, I don't think Blackie can have enjoyed his stay at the place very much. He barked all the way home in the car as if he wanted to tell me something." Mrs. Brown looked at the dog carefully and then answered, "You are quite right, dear. He was certainly trying to tell you something, but he wasn't trying to tell you that he hadn't enjoyed his stay at that place. He was only trying to tell you that you were bringing the wrong dog home. This isn't Blackie."
Question 1. Where were Mr. and Mrs. Brown going for their holiday? Question 2. Why didn't Mr. and Mrs. Brown go to collect their dog as soon as they got back? Question 3. What did the dog Mr. Brown collected do on the way? Question 4. Why did the dog bark?
Part 2. 1. Mr. and Mrs. Brown could have taken their dog with them for their holiday. 2. Mr. and Mrs. Brown drove to collect their dog in the morning. 3. The dog barked all the way because he was glad to go back home.
Unit 69, Part 1. Thousands of people like to shop at large stores. Mrs. Swift is not one of them. She dislikes shopping at chain stores. She cannot stand supermarkets. Occasionally, she goes up to the West End for a shopping expedition at one of the big department stores. But for her everyday needs, she uses the local shops. How do these independent shops survive in competition with the big stores? Well, quite a few of the smaller ones do not. It is particularly hard on small shops such as butchers, grocers, and greengrocers because the recent growth of supermarkets has taken away some of their trade. Many housewives prefer to do all their shopping in one store instead of going from one shop to another. And then sometimes supermarkets offer goods at prices cheaper than the independent shopkeeper can afford. This is because their turnover is so large that they can be satisfied with a lower markup. So to survive, the small retailer has to rely on providing personal service, on knowing the likes and dislikes of his regular customers, and on listening to them talk about their troubles. They gossip a lot, and Mrs. Swift likes listening to them. They gossip about prices, about the weather, their children, their neighbors' children, seldom about anything important. Perhaps the service is sometimes a bit leisurely, but that's what Mrs. Swift likes about it.
Question 1. Where does Mrs. Swift usually go for shopping? Question 2. Why do supermarkets sometimes offer goods at lower prices than independent stores? Question 3. What does a small retailer have to rely on in order to survive the competition with supermarkets? Question 4. What do the customers of the small shops usually talk about?
Part 2. 1. Quite a few small shops fail to survive in competition with the big stores. 2. Many housewives prefer to do all their shopping in a few small shops.
Unit 70. Part 1. What do I like about my job? Money. M-O-N-E-Y. No, I like the creativity and I like my studio. All my tools are like toys to me. You know, my watercolors, pens and ink, colored pencils, drafting table. I love playing with them. And I have lots of different kinds of clients. I do magazines, book covers, album covers, newspaper articles. So there's lots of variety, which I like. You know, sometimes when I start working on a project, I could be doing it for hours and have no conception of how much time has gone by, what some people call a flow experience. I don't like the pressure, though, and there's plenty of it in this business. You're always working against a tight deadline, and I don't see the end of it. You know, contacting clients for work, negotiating contracts, which get long and complicated.
Question 1. What is a speaker's job? Question 2. What does he like about his job? Question 3. What tools does he use while working? Question 4. What does a speaker dislike?
Part 2. 1. The speaker has many different kinds of clients. 2. There is little pressure in his work. 3. He doesn't like contacting clients or negotiating contracts.
Unit 71, Part 1. In America, self-improvement is a national pastime. Every year, more and more Americans spend their leisure time trying to improve themselves one way or another. One popular form of self-improvement is a search for physical fitness. Thousands of Americans who never exercised are now out on the streets jogging in fashionable running suits and expensive sneakers. They boast of how many miles they run each day and of how many pounds they lose each week. Others are turning to swimming, tennis, dance, and the martial arts to improve their physical fitness. Instead of running around the park in the morning or evening, other Americans are studying yoga or are meditating quietly in their homes. They are seeking to improve themselves by finding peace and tranquility. Adult education is another form of self-improvement. After a hard day's work, Many Americans take evening courses at a local high school or college. There, they can study a variety of subjects. Often, these people are preparing to return to the job market or trying to qualify themselves for better jobs. A mother busy raising her children might attend a night school to learn secretarial skills. A secretary might return to study accounting. Some retired people go back for the education they missed at an earlier age.
Question 1. What is one popular form of self-improvement in America? Question 2. What is another form of self-improvement besides the one mentioned in question 1? Question 3. Where do many Americans go for adult education? Question 4. Why do those people take evening courses?
Part 2. 1. Many Americans spend all their time improving themselves. 2. Those who jog are proud of the weight they lose each week. 3. It's impossible to improve one's physical fitness by dancing. 4. Some retired people study because they want to make up for the education they missed when young.
Unit 72. Part 1. One day, a house cat chased a mouse across the floor. The mouse ran as fast as he could and narrowly escaped into his hole in the corner of the room. Safe in his hole, the mouse wiped his brow and said, "I didn't know they had a new cat. Boy, he is fast." While he thought about how he got away from the new cat, the mouse felt very proud of himself. "I'm really a very clever fellow, if I have to say so myself," he said. "No cat is as clever as I am." Just then he heard, "Arf, arf," and the scream of the cat out in the living room. The mouse jumped for joy. Oh boy," he exclaimed. "The dog is after the cat. I have to go and see that stupid cat run." The mouse scampered out of his hole into the room and looked, but he did not see the dog or the cat. Then, all of a sudden, wham! Something came from behind and slammed down on his tail. Before he could turn around, the mouse felt himself between two paws with sharp claws. "Oh, no," he said, as he looked up into the piercing eyes of the cat. "How can this be? I heard the bark and the scream, and I thought the dog..." "It pays to be bilingual," interrupted the cat, as he looked down at the mouse and smiled.
Question 1. Who chased a mouse one day? Question 2. Where did the mouse escape? Question 3. How did he feel while he thought about that? Question 4. What happened to the cat and the mouse finally?
Part 2. 1. The cat played a trick on the mouse by imitating the bark of a dog and the scream of himself. 2. It can be inferred that the mouse was not as clever as the cat.
Unit 73. Part 1. If you have recently taken the Cambridge First Certificate Examination, or you are in an advanced class, you may be thinking about taking the Cambridge Advanced Exam, the CAE. It is a fairly new exam, and a lot of people are not sure about what it involves. The CAE is a certificate in advanced English set by the University of Cambridge Local Examinations Syndicate, UCLES. It is held twice a year, in December and June, at UCLES examination centers around the world. It is a high-level exam which has become increasingly popular since it was introduced in 1991. The level is much higher than First Certificate, FCE, but not as high as Proficiency, CPE. Because it is only 4 years old, it is quite different from FCE and CPE, both in its aim and in its format. One of the reasons that the exam has become popular is the fact that it is very practical. It is not an academic or intellectual type of exam at all, but it is aimed at students who are working or are about to start working. If you are at advanced level and you are trying to decide between the advanced and proficiency exams, then you should consider your own attitude to English and your future ambitions. If you like reading English literature and you want to become a teacher, translator, or academic, then proficiency is definitely more suitable. But if you plan to use English for work or study, and you are more interested in what you can do with English rather than in English for its own sake, you will find CAE more relevant to your needs. A very important point is that the advanced exam is easier to pass than proficiency.
Question 1. How often is CAE held? Question 2. What is the level of CAE? Question 3. What is one of the reasons that CAE has become popular? Question 4. What should you consider if you are trying to decide whether to take part in the advanced or proficiency exam? Question 5. Which exam is more suitable if you want to use English for work or study?
Part 2. 1. CAE was first held in 1991. 2. CAE is different from FCE in its aims, but similar in its format. 3. If you want to become a teacher, CAE is most suitable. 4. CAE is not as easy to pass as proficiency.
Unit 74, Part 1. The Thanksgiving holiday is a day for Americans to give thanks to God, their families and friends for all the good things that have happened in the past year. Very early settlers to America observed days of Thanksgiving, but most Americans link the first Thanksgiving day to a group of people called Pilgrims. They arrived in 1620. Soon more than half had died of diseases or lack of food. In the autumn of 1621, those who survived held a day of Thanksgiving. They thanked God for protecting them. They also thanked the Native American Indians who showed them how to fish and plant crops. The Pilgrims feasted for 3 days. About 19 Indians joined the celebration. They ate ducks, geese, deer, and turkey. The modern holiday of Thanksgiving is the result of the efforts of Sarah Hale. She was a writer and editor in the 19th century. She believed all Americans should give thanks on the same day. Sarah Hale worked for 20 years to establish a national holiday. She wrote letters to state governments and to presidents. Finally, President Abraham Lincoln approved her idea. In 1863, he proclaimed the last Thursday in November as the National Day of Thanksgiving. Later, Congress declared the holiday to be celebrated on the fourth Thursday in November. Today, friends and family members may travel thousands of kilometers to be together for Thanksgiving. They may attend religious services, or take part in a parade, or watch sports events on television. Almost everyone, however, tries to do what the Pilgrims did. They have a feast. America's traditional Thanksgiving Day foods are some of the same ones the Pilgrims ate. Turkey, sweet potatoes, squash, corn, cranberries, and pumpkin pie.
Question 1. To whom do most Americans link their first Thanksgiving Day? Question 2. Why did the Pilgrims hold a day of Thanksgiving in 1921? Question 3. Who was Sarah Hale? Question 4. What day was declared the holiday of Thanksgiving by Congress? Question 5. What do most people try to do on Thanksgiving Day?
Part 2. 1. Pilgrims arrived in America in 1620. 2. No Indians joined the first Thanksgiving held by the Pilgrims in 1921. 3. President Abraham Lincoln approved Sarah Hale's idea that all Americans should give thanks on the same day. 4. Today, it's possible for friends and family members to travel thousands of kilometers to be together for the Thanksgiving holiday.
Unit 75, Part 1. The year was 1932. Amelia Earhart was flying alone from North America to England in a small single-engine airplane. At midnight, Several hours after she had left Newfoundland, she ran into bad weather. To make things worse, her altimeter failed, and she didn't know how high she was flying. At night and in a storm, a pilot is in great difficulty without an altimeter. At times, her plane nearly plunged into the sea. Just before daylight, there was further trouble. Amelia noticed flames coming from the engine. Would she be able to reach land? There was nothing to do except to keep going and to hope. In the end, Amelia Earhart did reach Ireland, and for the courage she had shown, she was warmly welcomed in England and Europe. When she returned to the United States, she was honored by President Hoover at a special dinner in the White House. From that time on, Amelia Earhart was famous. What was so important about her flight? Amelia Earhart was the first woman to fly the Atlantic Ocean alone, and she had set a record of 14 hours and 56 minutes. In the years that followed, Amelia Earhart made several flights across the United States, and on each occasion, she set a new record for flying time. Amelia Earhart made these flights to show that women had a place in aviation and that air travel was useful.
Question 1. What kind of airplane did Amelia Earhart use for her flight in 1932? Question 2. Where did she reach for that flight from North America? Question 3. According to the passage, what was Amelia Earhart's reason for making her flights? Question 4. Which of the following statements was not mentioned?
Part 2. 1. During Earhart's flight from North America to England in 1932, the weather was good. 2. Her altimeter fell during the trip, so she didn't know how high she was flying. 3. For the courage she had shown, she was honored by President Hoover at a special dinner in the White House. 4. Amelia Earhart was the first woman to fly the Atlantic Ocean alone, and she has set a record of 14 hours and 56 minutes.
Unit 76, Part 1. The Swiss-run ICRC looks after the sick, traces lost children, visits prisoners, helps mine victims, feeds the hungry, and saves lives in the front line of emergencies from East Zaire, Rwanda, and Somalia to ex-Yugoslavia, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan. Increasingly, the ICRC's work involves more than coping with emergencies. It also provides long-term help, such as in Rwanda, where it helped to build new prisons to ease the suffering of 90,000 Hutu suspects of the 1994 genocide in overcrowded jails. The ICRC, with more than 8,000 workers, takes a leading part in enforcing international law governing the use of weapons in war, treatment of prisoners and civilians. A Red Cross leaflet from fighters in war zones reads, "Fight only combatants, attack only military targets, spare civilian objects, restrict destruction to what your mission requires." The Red Cross concept of humanitarian service was founded in 1863 by a young Jovina businessman, Henri Dunant. After he witnessed the battlefield horrors of Solferino in 1859 and organized a relief operation with local help, this became the founding organization of the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement.
Question 1. Which country runs the ICRC? Question 2. What does the ICRC's work involve? Question 3. How many people work in the ICRC? Question 4. What can we learn about Henry Dunant?
Part 2. 1. The ICRC helped to build new prisons in Rwanda. 2. The ICRC takes a leading part in carrying out every international law. 3. It was Henri Dunant who founded the ICRC.
Unit 77. Part 1. A miser, to make sure of his property, sold all that he had and converted it into a great lump of gold, which he hid in a hole in the ground and went continually to visit and inspect it. This roused the curiosity of one of his workmen, who, suspecting that there was a treasure, when his master's back was turned, went to the spot and stole it away. When the miser returned and found the place empty, he wept and tore his hair, but a neighbor who saw him in this extravagant grief and learned the cause of it said, "Fret thyself no longer, but take a stone and put it in the same place, and think that it is your lump of gold, for as you never meant to use it, the one will do you as much good as the other. The worth of money is not in its possession, but in its use."
Question 1. What did the miser hide in a hole in the ground? Question 2. Who stole what the miser hid in the hole? Question 3. How did the miser feel when he found the place empty? Question 4. When is the stone the same as the gold? Question 5. Where is the worth of money?
Part 2. 1. The miser turned part of his property into a large piece of gold. 2. The workman was sure that there was a large piece of gold in the ground, so he went to the spot and stole it away. 3. It was a neighbor who comforted the miser and advised him to put a stone in the same place where the gold had been.
Unit 78, Part 1. Any visitor to the heart of England would do well to start in the Severn Valley in Shropshire. The valley was carved out by the River Severn, which flows from its source in Wales through the counties of Shropshire, Worcestershire, and Gloucestershire in England before entering the sea in the Bristol Channel. The Severn Valley has a number of claims to fame, but two come to mind immediately. Its river is Britain's most well-known waterway after the Thames, and the country's industrial revolution began in its Iron Bridge Gorge, where today you can find the award-winning Iron Bridge Gorge Museum. Made up of 9 museums on different sites spread over 6 square miles, the museum reflects the industrial past of the area. And, of course, there is Iron Bridge itself, the first iron bridge ever built. Shropshire's main town is Shrewsbury, England's most famous and well-preserved Tudor town, which still retains its medieval street plan and lovely timber-framed houses. It also has some of the country's best walks, as well as 2 abbeys, Shrewsbury Abbey, founded in 1083, and Hogmanay Abbey, founded in about 1135.
Question 1. Where does the River Severn originate? Question 2. What is the Severn Valley famous for? Question 3. How many museums is the Iron Bridge Gorge Museum made up of? Question 4. When was Hogmanay Abbey founded? Question 5. What does Shrewsbury have?
Part 2. 1. The Severn Valley is in Shropshire. 2. The Severn Valley River is the most famous river in England. 3. The England's Industrial Revolution began in Iron Bridge Gorge. 4. England's most famous and well-preserved Tudor town is in Shropshire.